Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot. It is Wednesday, so that means that it is time for another house call from the Medical Officer of Health for the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit, Dr. Lena Lee. Dr. Lee, welcome back to Lake 88.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
And it's always a pleasure to have you here. And also joining us today, we've got Joe Reed, who is a health promoter with the health unit. Joe, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again, Bob.
You're very welcome. And Joe, you're here to talk about climate change with us, which is very important when it comes to our health and the best way that we can prepare for Earth Day, which is coming up, I do believe, this coming Saturday. So we're going to look at that conversation with you in just a minute or two. But thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Dr. Lee, we're going to start with you, and you're going to join in on the conversation that we have with Joe as well. But we wanted to sort of go over a few COVID-related things, really, and there are some very important and common questions that are floating around there, and you've offered to answer them for us. I guess the first question is, what is the current state of the pandemic?
Yeah, so I know this feels like a little bit of a blast from the past, but I wanted to talk a little bit about COVID-19, mainly because we do have spring boosters that are available for a subset of people. We talked about that. But then it also raised the question, like you said, of what's going on with COVID-19 then. So in our region, and I'll just highlight as well for all our listeners that we continue to post our COVID-19 numbers here in the Health Unit on our website. So for those of you who've been following our numbers at the website, it's the exact same webpage. And for those of you who haven't, it's under the COVID-19 section, and we have a section on local cases and statistics, where you'll see that our cases count of COVID-19 detected through PCR is quite low right now. So over the past week, where we've had numbers, we've had 32 cases, in contrast to, for example, earlier in the year where we had hundreds of cases. And so 32 is low. But having said that, I always talk about these cases in the context of not everyone is eligible for PCR testing. Not everyone gets PCR testing when they've gotten ill. And so this number is a very low estimate compared to what's circulating in the population. And we know that COVID-19 continues to circulate. We know that it will continue to have these fluctuating, you know, circulating more, circulating less, depending on the context of our region.
Yeah, it's kind of a slight snapshot. One of the things that I notice, I do go back to this week after week and take a look, been invested since the beginning. You're right. Like the number of the high risk cases, it does drop off, but I'm lucky enough to have been speaking to you long enough and Dr. Stewart before that to know that this is just a small part. One number though, that, I guess you can't really, it's as accurate as can be, is the number of fatalities. And I think that is a sobering reminder that even though this is out there, and these numbers may be down or trending down, as far as we know, the reality is that there are still people who have passed away due to complications due to COVID-19 or COVID-19 itself. And we've even seen one added in recent weeks.
Yeah, and that is an important reminder as well. We continue to have people who die relating to COVID-19, they continue to be people, who are older, often with underlying health conditions, and that's been the situation we've had for COVID-19 for a while. It does point to the effect of COVID-19 being different for different people among us, right? So some people are more vulnerable, are at greater risk than others. And that's always been the case. And so that, I think, takes us very, very nicely into vaccination and who's eligible for vaccination. And so those groups who are at greatest risk of severe outcomes due to COVID-19 are also the groups that are eligible for this spring booster.
Do you think that there will be any more waves of COVID-19?
Yeah, so this I think is a conversation I have a lot with like my friends and family and out when I'm out and about. We are likely to continue to see fluctuating transmission of COVID-19. So, different people have definitions of what constitutes a wave, but certainly growing versus falling transmission levels, similar to every other respiratory virus that we see. What isn't clear yet is whether it will be seasonal or whether it'll depend on factors that we don't quite know yet. In previous years, we've had a bit of a seasonal pattern, worse in the winter, but not strictly seasonal. The other thing to note is we continue to have new variants of COVID-19 posted in the literature and reported from different countries and regions. And really, different variants will have different levels of transmission. And if there's a new variant that comes that is able to better transmit than the current variant, and it really takes hold in global transmission, then we may have large numbers of transmission again. That's a little bit less clear. And what's also not completely clear is the level of severity from these new variants. The tendency since Delta, so since Delta, we've had Omicron, and those variants have generally been less severe, but it's not to say that it's guaranteed to be less severe down the road, and we may have greater severity again. If we do, then we will certainly communicate that with the people in our region, because that would represent a significant change in the way we think about and deal with COVID-19.
Now, again, it's really interesting, right? Because it is something that we will continue to talk about, and people, I hear them all the time, during COVID, talking as if it's over, right? And it's kind of like equated to saying, during the flu, like you're not dealing with the
Yeah,
flu
exactly.
anymore, right? But the
Yeah.
flu is, it's constantly there. So the 6 month boosters, I know that this campaign is going now. We've talked about the groups that are eligible for it. We've published them on our website, as well. How do you think that this is really going to shape the future of, really the fight against COVID, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, so this is a booster dose that is the same vaccine as what's been used in the previous booster dose. And what we know is that COVID-19 transmission is that the risk of transmission, and especially, most importantly, the risk of severity is reduced by the booster doses based on how long it's been since your last booster dose. And where we have the greatest strength of evidence is a booster dose within the past 6 months. And so for people who are at the greatest risk of severe outcomes, having a recent dose of COVID-19 vaccine within the past 6 months will likely decrease their risk of infection. And I should be clear, because I'm getting a lot of that conversation in talking to people. It's not that the booster doses are as effective as the vaccine once was, right? Like so what used to be vaccine effectiveness to the level of over 90%, now we're looking at 30 to 50% vaccine effectiveness in preventing transmission, and about 60 to 80% vaccine effectiveness in preventing severe outcomes compared to people who've not had a booster dose within the past 6 months, for people who are at greatest vulnerability of severe outcomes. And so the effectiveness of the vaccine is not what it once was, but for people with greatest risk of severe outcomes, every little bit helps. And so that's what's really important about the booster doses. And also, the way that the transmission of COVID-19 is shaping out, and also the way that the vaccine effectiveness is shaping out, is why the focus of this booster is on those with greatest risk rather than absolutely everyone in the population.
All right. Well, it's a conversation that we will continue to have as it does develop. I know we could go on and on about it, but we do want to look at another subject here, and we'll bring you in on the conversation here, Joe. Joe Reed, health promoter, and you are here to speak about climate change. So let's get right to it with you, sir. What are some of the public health issues that have been affected by climate change to date?
Yeah, so I kind of want to couch my answer in some context. So in the media we hear about these often we hear about these big international indicators such as average global temperature increase, rising sea levels, melting glaciers, warming oceans, things like that. And those are big problems. They're very important, but I think they can kind of feel out of reach. Locally, especially around here, there's no glaciers. We're not on an ocean. So I want to speak to local public health issues related to climate change, that are happening right here and right now. So one of them has to do with ticks. With the warmer temperatures, ticks can move further north into warmer climates, and these are the ticks that carry Lyme disease. So with these rising temperatures, we have more ticks that are they're around. There's more warmer days during the year that they can just exist, and when we're out in nature, they can attach to us, and there is the potential for ticks to spread Lyme disease. Another thing, we see this every summer, is more extreme heat events, and because of climate change, these heat events are expected to become hotter, longer, and more frequent. Another main category affected by climate change is extreme weather events, such as flooding, and even the recent ice storm. Things like this, they can be made more severe and frequent by climate change, and they increase the risk of injury as well as other health risks related to things like power outages. And then another piece has to do with landfills. Okay, so we have landfills around, right? Every municipality has to get rid of their garbage. But when food and organic waste gets into our landfills, that's actually one of the biggest sources of greenhouse gas emissions in smaller municipalities. One local municipality, Tay Valley Township, they completed a review just a few years ago, and they actually found that food and organic waste that made it to their landfill was the biggest source of greenhouse gas emissions that originated in Tay Valley. And then another piece is outdoor air quality. So usually in our region, and usually in all of Ontario, outdoor air quality is great. Ever since coal power plants were outlawed, Ontario's outdoor air quality has been awesome. But there are other aspects of outdoor air quality that are affected. One of the biggest ones locally is traffic-related air pollution. So, combustion engines are giving off exhaust, and this traffic-related air pollution is highest around busy roadways. And then other things like forest fires. So, even forest fires as far away as BC and Alberta, if they're big enough and the wind's blowing the right way for long enough, that smoke can make it into our region and impact our outdoor air quality. And even the Parry Sound area a few years ago, there were some forest fires, and that smoke can blow to our region and impact our outdoor air quality. And those forest fires in part start because of the increased heat events that are happening due to climate change.
I think most of us can relate to that and know what it's like to go out our front door and smell. You can just sort of smell that burning, even when it's so far away. You just know that obviously this smoke is traveling a long distance. Dr. Lee, you're nodding your head quite a bit as Joe speaks, and I'll get you just to comment on the effect that extreme weather events like the ice storm, like the derecho from last year, like this incredible heat can have on a person's health. Aside from, just the normal physical, we're talking, as Joe mentioned, anxiety and mental health issues as well.
Absolutely. And I think people talk about an almost existential level of anxiety when we think about climate change and what people can do and their our sort of our personal role in climate change. I think one thing that's important to remember is that we have the ability to change our own behavior and have specific actions and choices that affect the bigger picture of climate change, but also that each of us has a voice to speak to policymakers, to advocate to people who make decisions about the way in which our region, the way in which our country and us as global citizens respond to climate change. So these are important ways in which we can take part in the fact that we have climate change and we all as humans in this era of the world are responsible for figuring out how we're going to move forward. In terms of the physical effects of climate change, there are a number of things. So one is the extreme temperatures. So recently, actually, we had the ice storm that knocked out power for some of our region and certainly some of Quebec. And what we actually saw, interestingly, was an increased report in inhalation of toxic fumes and gases because of indoor barbecue and indoor gas stove use that are propane stove use that was related to the power being out. And so that's one thing I know we've actually talked about on this show before when we had before that big ice storm that we had
And
around
also
the turn of the
we had
year.
the fire chiefs just on the other day, a couple of them here talking about that exact issue and the number of CO alarms they got because people just didn't know that generators had to be a little bit further away from the house, or they couldn't be in the garage even if that door was wide open.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think something that maybe is lost in the conversation is when we talk about climate change, we're not just talking about warming, but we're talking about more extreme temperatures, including extreme cold and more abnormal weather events. So that includes things like thunder or winter storms and extreme precipitation and things that can knock out power. And of course, we have the direct effect of heat and cold, so heat exhaustion, frostbite, and then we also have the indirect effects, which are to do with damage to people's lungs and people's hearts, especially those with pre-existing heart or lung conditions that can be exacerbated purely because of extreme temperature. And that's something that we have figures all across Canada, is a significant contribution to especially cardiac events, especially in older adults.
Now, Joe, we just have a few minutes left here, but what are some of the things our listeners can do to help make a difference? Lena started talking a little bit about that.
Yeah, I want to follow up with what Dr. Lee noted about, individual things that people can do to help make a difference, and kind of compare that to, bigger things that might feel overwhelming, like, federal policy, World Health Organization, global reports. Again, those things can kind of feel out of reach for us. And, individual things such as green consumerism, which is basically just buying things that are better for the environment. Those are very important things, but there's kind of a missing middle piece, I think, which maybe doesn't get talked about enough, which is getting involved locally in municipal planning and even provincial planning. So, a lot of things that happen municipally, decisions get made every week, every month by municipal staff and councils. And locally, we can get involved in things like that. So, for example, when there's an official plan or a transportation master plan or parks, rec, and culture master plans, those are things where local residents can get involved and give their feedback. So, for example, we talked about extreme heat. What can people do to help mitigate against extreme heat? One thing is get involved in local planning policies. So, you can go to a council meeting and encourage things like more shade, green spaces, public water features like splash pads or wading pools. Another thing, we talked about food and organic waste in landfills. it's really tough for small municipalities to implement municipal-wide compost systems, but check with your municipality to see if there is anything. And maybe there's not, but then you can do things, at your house, such as a backyard composter. Other things like outdoor air quality. There's tools we can use, such as the Air Quality Health Index, to know what the outdoor air quality is in our region. But to help out with this municipally, you can go to council meetings, like I said, and advocate for things like more active transportation infrastructure, and this can help, reduce some car trips in your municipality. And then we touched on mental health as well. So, first of all, just be kind to yourself, and you can lean on friends and family and community groups, and look at community groups that are helping to impact climate change locally. And that's another thing that you can join. And these things might seem small, and there are like bigger, wider, national and international policy issues that need to be affected, but these local and provincial policy decisions that are made too can have a big impact. And that's a big avenue where I think it's overlooked a little, and it's something where we can all get more involved in.
And these changes that you make to yourself, Dr. Lee, I'll leave you with the last word on this. The changes that you can make to your own situation, those are large. Those are huge. They have a huge impact on the individual and being yourself.
Yeah, I think of what's that quote where, never think that one person can't make a difference because that's all there is in the world. We're all one person making a difference, right? So small changes that you make for yourself and for your community and lead and advocate and be the voice in your community, that's how we make change and that's how we improve and get better at all of this.
Absolutely. Now, I know that Joe, there are some resources you want to share when it comes to ticks and extreme heat events. Healthunit.org, fantastic place to go and to find some things. But there were a couple more that you wanted to share with us.
Yeah, I'll just touch quickly for outdoor air quality and the Air Quality Health Index. You can go to airqualityontario.com. And then a really great resource is changingclimate.ca. This is a website from the Government of Canada. It has a few different reports, but one of them is a report on health and a changing climate. So it has a lot of great chapters, which includes one on mental health and how climate change can impact our mental health.
We're going to put those links up on our website when we post this interview. Dr. Lena Lee, it's always a pleasure. I look forward to our conversation next week.
Absolutely.
And Joe Reed, it's always a rare treat when you join us. So much obliged, and thank you so much for being here today, sir.
Anytime. Thanks for having me, Bob.
You're very welcome. We've been speaking with Dr. Lena Lee, Medical Officer of Health, and Joe Reed, Health Promoter with the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit on this edition of In Focus. If you'd like to get those links, don't forget to check out Lanark Leeds today, a little bit later on today. I'm Bob Perreault. Thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful afternoon.